I don't think any of us dealers out there are going to have a growth game based upon volume. But efficiency is a whole nother question. I think we can become a lot more efficient to drive that growth and profitability.
Are used car prices slated to rise again? Hybrids are growing in market share, and AI chatbots are actually selling cars. A lot is happening in the car market. But the big question, what's going to happen next? Welcome to the Car Dealership Guy Market Update, a monthly discussion with automotive industry experts and dealers about where our car market is today and where it may be headed. Today, I'm speaking with Jessica Caldwell, head of insights at Edmunds, and Kevin Fry, e-commerce director of Jeff Weiler Automotive Group. This was a fascinating discussion, and I can't wait for you to listen to it.
What's up, everyone? This is Car Dealership Guy. You're listening to the Car Dealership Guy podcast, which is my effort to give you access to the most transparent insights into the car market. But before we get into the show, the Car Dealership Guy market update is brought to you by Edmunds. In today's automotive landscape, car buyers invest more time than ever in researching, considering, and comparing options. But for dealers, the challenge lies in pinpointing the audience ready to make a purchase. Enter Premier by Edmunds. Premier offers dealers a groundbreaking way to connect with in-market car shoppers precisely when, where, and how they prefer. With over 20 million monthly visits, Edmunds.com is the go-to destination for buyers seeking market insights, expert advice, and budget tools to make informed decisions. These shoppers aren't just informed, they're laser-focused on the exact car they want. Now, it's your chance to make that connection. Through Edmunds Premier, dealers gain access to this highly coveted audience. Simply list your new and used inventory on Edmunds and watch as qualified in-market traffic flows directly to your vehicle detail pages on your website. Don't miss out on this opportunity to elevate your dealership's visibility and sales performance. You can sign up for Premier today at edmunds.com/CDG. And here's a special offer only for CDG listeners. New customers signing up through edmunds.com/CDG will receive an exclusive 50% off pricing for the first 90 days. Again, visit edmunds.com/CDG or click the link in the show notes below. Over the past couple of months, we've done, you know, various forms of shows, and consistently the most heavily requested type of show and the most listened to were the episodes that were extremely substantive and offered lots of insight into the market. And so our team, actually, we put our head together and we partnered with Edmunds. We're thrilled to launch this first segment of this episode that allows us to really bring the macro and the micro and share insights into where the market is headed, where we're at today, and try to make sense of everything going on in the car market. And so today I have Kevin Fry on with me, and I also have Jessica Caldwell. Kevin, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Kevin Fry. I'm the head coach of marketing with the Jeff Weiler Automotive family, one of our nation's top 25 dealership groups. We have 23 rooftops, of which several are auto malls, which is what makes us so big.
I'm Jessica Caldwell. I'm the head of insights at Edmunds, where I look at all of the web traffic data, all of our transaction data. So I know who's buying what car, how much they're paying. I don't know who they are, but I know all about their transaction and what they're doing, and kind of aggregating those trends into these bigger news stories of what's really going on in this market.
And that's the question that we're going to start with, Jessica. All right. So first things first, just a table set. A lot's been going on in our industry over the last couple of years. As we know, that's an understatement. But Jessica, new car prices declining, used car prices in the same fashion. 2023 was a pretty steep decline after the run-up over the last couple of years. We're now seeing, you know, an entirely new market with margin compression. I mean, completely different auto market than we got used to in the last couple of years. I want to start very, very high level. Can you give us a lay of the land of where we're at today and how we got to this point?
There's never really been a time where too little inventory has been the issue. It's always, there's too much. How are we going to incentivize this? How are we going to sell it? How are we going to move the metal? But all of a sudden, it was too few. And I think why we're not really sure what's necessarily going on now is because we don't really have a historical playbook for that. So we've seen now that inventory is kind of coming back. We're starting to see new prices go down as incentives are being introduced into the market. And that's making it a little bit better on the new car side. And then as a result, we're seeing used car prices starting to fall a little bit. That market has been extremely competitive for quite a while now, because when you can't get a new car, you got to go get a used car. You need a car in this country. So that really was your only option. So just seeing, you know, and then you throw in high interest rates on top of that, and you have a market that is, like I said, it is so different than anything what we've seen before. We're used to too much inventory. We were used to low interest rates, and that has not been the case. So trying to get back to like what is normal, I think, is the challenge for the industry. But since nobody really knows what that is. I think that's what's making it interesting, but also difficult to predict.
So I want to dive deeper into price trends, but is there a normal? Is there such thing for us to ever get back to that? Is this like a new baseline that we've set?
I mean, it's probably a new baseline. I mean, if you look at price trends, it's generally prices always go up. They're ever like, oh, we're just going to go down $10,000. That generally doesn't happen. But it's also consumer preferences has changed over the past decade because we've gotten used to low interest rates, which got people into bigger cars because people always want, they want more amenities, they want more features, they want bigger in size. And I think low interest rates really following the recession helped people get into those bigger vehicles. And so now we're not at that point, I think, where you can get, you know, 0% or 2.5 or, you know, whatever it may be. And that is causing, obviously, I mean, one of the many reasons why we're seeing so much, I think, you know, consumers being quite upset, could be confused, not understanding what's going on. They want the same thing. And all of a sudden their dealer is telling them it's $200 to $300 more. And you're like, I have that vehicle. It's the same exact one. Why is it now $300 more on this lease? And again, it's, I think the fact that we're not necessarily used to that. So I think prices are going up. The thing that can normalize thing is the introduction of incentives. So that would cause, I think, monthly payments to go down a little bit. But yeah, in terms of like, are we ever going to go back to an average industry cost of $30,000? Probably not. No, that's not going to happen.
And where are we right now? What's the baseline right now in terms of pricing?
Yeah, on the new side, it's about 47. It got close to $50,000 at one point last year, but it's, you know, it's been, I would say, fairly flat in the high 40s for quite a number of months. And on the used side, we've seen just a slight decline from the high of 2022. So it's probably more like around 37,000 right now on the used. But used is, I mean, it goes anywhere from 1 year old Land Rover versus a, you know, a 15 year old Toyota Corolla. So that can vary a lot, that market, obviously.
Of course. Kevin, in terms of in dealership, are you seeing a similar pattern with just new and used pricing and the declines that Jessica is pointing to?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest thing is just the reintroduction of incentives and rebates by the OEMs. I think they were probably hesitant to do that because, I mean, they had some record profitability the last couple of years with the inventory shortages. But now that the market is starting to slow down, and the high interest rates have absolutely made a difference. So people are A, looking at the rebates and incentives, or B, we're seeing the used car demand continue to grow while new car demand is slowing down. And what we're seeing on at the ground level is that affordability is key. And we've had to shift to really put our focus there. That means low monthly payments. And the other big thing, you know, part of the action we're seeing is the pre-approvals, because people are struggling to get approved with the tightening of credit. And so more of the drive toward the affordable car seems to be the key right now.
Yeah. So when you say affordability is key, what does that mean to you? I mean, you're a top 25 group. It's a pretty good pulse on the market, right? So what does that really mean to your group?
Well, I'll tell you transparently, traditionally, we're not really putting out offers. We're all about value and the brand value of the Weiler name. And in this type of market, we've had to shift with an emphasis on at least one to two affordability offers per manufacturer, mainly portrayed in a low monthly type of payment offer to attract people because they're trying to see, hey, can I afford a car? The reality is there's always going to be people that need a car. The difference between a good year and a great year is the people that need a car and the people that wouldn't mind having a newer car, and things are going well economically, and to include it their household, they can reach out and buy that additional car.
That's super interesting, Kevin, because you mentioned specifically advertising affordability. And you, like you said, going after that consumer, given that's what the market wants. So Jessica, flipping back to you, what are you seeing on the auto finance side? How is the finance side playing into that, right? Because lower payments to me, I mean, it's math. How can we as an industry get that without extending terms, offering crazy rebates, right? So what are you seeing on the auto finance side that's making this possible?
Well, I mean, I think that is sort of the crux of it. Because I'm sure Kevin probably knows this from his, you know, from his colleagues, but people shop on monthly payments. How much can I afford? And that really is what they're looking at the end of the day. And when we look out into the market and the averages, I mean, they're quite high. I mean, you got new cars well over $700. Even used vehicles that are 0 to 3 years old are over, I think, about $615 on average. So people are financing these vehicles. They are always looking for longer loan terms. I think that you know, that's sort of the American way. I want that bigger vehicle. I want that nicer vehicle with all the amenities. Like, is that only $5 more a month? Okay, I'll sign up for that. I think you're starting to see a little bit more leasing. I mean, leasing has been not a great market over the past few years, but we have seen it tick up a little bit. So perhaps people are just trying to get what they want in a way they can afford, even though that monthly payment is a lot higher, but maybe it's the best alternative. I mean, for the consumer out there, it is challenging because you have to really look at all avenues. And that's what we always are advising, looking at certified pre-owned, used, new, lease, because with interest rates the way they are and the incentives being very pocketed, not necessarily blanket incentives like we've seen in times past, it's a bit harder to sniff out that deal than it was beforehand, where it felt like everything was on sale. Like, that was just the auto industry way.
Yeah. So on the topic of leasing, why are we seeing now, like, what's changing that leasing is rising again? Because you're right, the past couple of years have not been great leasing years. And we know that. I've had plenty of discussions about this on the podcast, right? Manufacturers were disincentivized to lease in a supply constrained environment. They were more incentivized to sell. What's changing now? Is it simply more supply and cheaper payments? Is there anything else to the picture? Why leasing? Why is it growing now again?
Well, I think what we're seeing is, you're looking at lease interest rates versus new car interest rates and used car interest rates. And, for someone that just wants something that is a nice vehicle, they're just looking at monthly payments. They're not necessarily thinking of their total cost of ownership in this situation. Leasing is that. And the fact that inventory has, I think, gone up is definitely the case. You have people coming back on lease returns as well. Maybe this is not the market where you necessarily want to buy out your lease. That was very popular at one point in time, obviously, when new car inventory was very scant. But now they want options. And I think, for folks that are in that cycle, that are in that leasing cycle, they are leasing for, many of them are leasing for a reason. They want something that's new. They want the latest and greatest. They're leasing for business, so they have to impress clients. So, there is kind of that factor that you just have to assume. And I I'm not sure if it's also that people are accepting just the higher cost of life. I'm curious what Kevin, if he hears it from his dealership, are people out there like, I'm paying, so much on groceries, hotel, travel, anytime I step outside my house, it's $50. So it makes sense that I'm paying more for my car too. So I think there probably is a little bit of that out there as well, that sentiment.
I would agree. We're kind of getting a mix of that, but I'm probably the oldest one here on the show, and I've seen these patterns over the years. And part of the thing that's confusing, I think, right now about today's economy is that we've seen a lot of the indicators that would seem to point towards a recession, but spending continues at a very high rate. And you see that reflected in the record levels of credit card debt that are out there right now. And when I look at the consumer level, even though inflation is high and rent and mortgages are right at the top of the list, this affects everybody. So even though inflation is high, everything is costing more. It seems like we as the modern day consumer are too stubborn to scale back. So if getting into that nicer car means a lease, I can afford that payment versus perhaps a traditional finance and get a little bit more car for my dollar. We're seeing those type of behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, I had Brian Benstock on the pod recently, and he spoke about used car leasing. I don't know if you listened to that or if you heard about that, but he said that it's something really big that they're taking on, given the affordability issues. What are your thoughts on that? Are you guys doing used car leasing? Is that something you've explored?
We are not. I'm intrigued by the idea. Of course, when you're leasing a new car, there's that rapid depreciation right in the first 24 to 36 months. The other part is that mostly the manufacturers are pretty good at predicting what that depreciation is going to be, so they can structure that leasing deal favorably. I would imagine on pre-owned cars, I don't know how much data is available versus the new car, but it's probably a little bit less erratic in measuring that depreciation of the car, and a little bit safer. If we were to go back to 08, 09 and recall the bankruptcies of the OEMs at that time, you have to remember a lot of that was driven by the leasing portfolios where the values of those cars just dropped out of the floor and took the manufacturers down with them because the leases they had out there lost them a lot of money.
This episode is brought to you by my very own Car Dealership Guy industry job board. CDGjobs.com, my industry job board connecting the best talent in automotive with the best companies, will remain absolutely free for CDG listeners to post and fill available roles at their companies. This free job board is for anyone in automotive, vendors, dealers, lenders, manufacturers, auto tech, everyone. Already, over 100 companies have posted open positions, including Lithia Motors, Recurrent, Credit Acceptance, Viros Credit, Cars Commerce, Shift Digital, Plug, Full Path, Westlake, Trade Pending. You get the point. The best part is that when these companies hire through cdgjobs.com, they are hiring the most informed candidates in the marketplace. So don't hesitate. You can add your open roles today by visiting cdgjobs.com or clicking the link in the show notes below. That's cdgjobs.com. So are you overall, would you say that the market, you're seeing more demand for leases? Or would you say it's remained pretty steady?
I would say it's fairly flat. I would have thought it might have declined a bit, but we're not seeing that at this time. And the other thing, and that would kind of build upon Jessica, is what you were saying as well, is the inventory levels are starting, they've come back up, they're growing, we're seeing some days in supply holding. I think the manufacturers are more willing to incentivize leases at this time just to get sales or vehicles moving.
Mm-hmm. And mechanically, how are those incentives being delivered to the consumer? Is it a lower money factor, which, you know, in leasing world is essentially a fancy term for the interest rate? Is there anything specific you're seeing happening?
From my standpoint, anything they can do rate-wise is probably most attractive because rates are the biggest challenge and obstacle for the consumers right now. And our consumers have been spoiled post 9/11 with these low interest rates for 20, you know, something years. It didn't used to always be like this. A lot of the old timers are out there and tell you, gee, interest rates are kind of going back the way they used to be a long time ago. But going once again back to what Jessica was saying, our consumers now are conditioned to these low rates and they're coming in saying, holy cow, same car, but the payment's $200 or $300 higher per month. How can that be? And that's part of the challenge we have to overcome.
Yeah. Kevin, how do you reconcile that with the fact that used cars are selling pretty consistently, right? And I know we're short in supply on a relative basis because of the last couple of years, but do you think that people are just getting adjusted and taking the medicine and they can still afford it? Or is it, again, like just really out of need and it's like, it is what it is, a higher interest rate? What's happening?
No, I think it's forcing their hand. Because, I mean, right now, it's definitely a slower market. We're seeing a decline in the total lead counts. But the one exception is our used car lead counts are actually slightly up. Our used car traffic is actually up. I mean, some of the patterns that I'm used to seeing are reversed because people are switching from new to used. The question is why? It's coming down to affordability at the end of the day. Now, the biggest challenge for every one of us as dealers across the country, of course, is continuing to acquire the pre-owned inventory that we'd love to have and be able to sell.
What's the, like, any creative ways you're acquiring used car inventory, traditional ways? How are you doing? How are you going about it?
Well, I'll be a gazillionaire if I get that.
The age-old question, right? How do you acquire the best used car inventory?
Now, I'm going to share something with you that you might find surprising because it surprised us. Each year, we do a user experience study. We bring in, you know, 10 to 12 people, different backgrounds into our studio. We ask them a series of relevant questions. And one of them was, would you rather sell your car on your own or sell it to a dealership? And what we found surprised us, 90% plus of them said they would rather sell to a dealership. And the reason why is what the surprise was. It came down to safety and security. And let me share what they were telling us is because in this modern day market of Craigslist, and of course, Facebook Marketplace, fraud has become rampant. And not only that, crime has followed. We had a case last fall here in Cincinnati where a couple got shot, literally, because it was a setup when they were trying to sell their car on Facebook Marketplace. Word is kind of getting around because some of the feedback we were getting was, hey, we'd rather sell to a dealership because there's cameras, there's security. We know we're not going to get defrauded. You know what you're doing. And as a result of that UX study, one of the simplest things we did when everybody else was marketing, hey, quick cash for your car, we transitioned and said, sell your car to Jeff Weiler, simple, safe, secure, and actually started moving the needle with that message because it was responsive to how consumers were feeling.
Very interesting. So, Jessica, flipping back to you on just on the topic of affordability still, you've put out some really good data about the state of the market and, you know, new car MSRPs. Can you give us an overview, right? I post about this all the time, by the way. People always ask me car deals and whatnot. And I post, hey, there's no cars under 20,000. There's, you know, X amount of cars under 25,000. People are really interested in this and understanding why this is happening, what is available in different price ranges. Can you give us an overview of what's happening with affordability, the share of vehicles sold under 30, 25, 20, et cetera?
Well, I think when I tell like the average person, I'm like, new cars are transacting like getting close to $50,000. Most people are pretty shocked. I think that sounds like a lot of money. And for, you know, those of us who have been buying cars for a few decades, it feels like, oh yeah, a car is, new car is $25,000. Like a decent new car is $25,000, not $50,000. And the fact of the matter is, I think even going back to, you know, those bankruptcies in 2008 was that part of the public outcry to give these companies money was like, you're not making cars for that people can afford, or not, you know, that are gas guzzlers, they're not attractive. And it feels like the domestic companies answered with a bunch of smaller vehicles. And, you know, what happened? Interest rates continued to be very low and people didn't want smaller cars. I think left with whatever we can choose, you want something that is definitely bigger. And that's what people have bought. So we're in a situation where it's like things have come full circle now. It's like now people want less expensive vehicles and they're not for sale. And we actually look at the data, it's like those vehicles under $25,000 don't really exist. In fact, if you look at a vehicle that's under $20,000, it's basically 0%, like 0% of vehicles, it's 0.4%. So if you round it, 0% of all new vehicles are sold under $20,000. The number only goes to 5% for vehicles that are under $25,000 compared to almost a quarter 5 years ago. So it was about 23% of vehicles 5 years ago were sold for under $25,000. And now it's such a small percentage. And for 30, it's only 18%. So if you are interested in buying a new vehicle, you know, chances are you're paying north of $30,000. And a part of that is your options. There's not a lot of options out there that you can buy, you know, a cheaper vehicle for. They're all fairly expensive at this point. I saw an interesting stat the other day. This is, you guys ready for quiz time here? There was,
let's do it.
Okay. So in 2019, there were 19 subcompact cars available on the market. How many are there today, do you think? Would you take a guess and say?
Subcompact?
Subcompact cars, yeah. I think there's like the Nissans, the Kias, the Hyundais of the world. So, you know, it's not zero. Six. So in 5 years, we went from 19 subcompact cars to six. And for compact cars, it was 17 down to 13. So, you know, when you look at these transaction prices that continue to grow, it's also because of the options that are out there. There are not a lot of basic modes of transportation on the new vehicle side that, you know, are, you know, affordable. And part of that is because people don't want those. But now we're at this weird situation where it's like, well, if that's all you can afford, okay, now I'm going used instead because there's not a lot of, you know, options there. So it's like, you know, this idea of affordability is very interesting because a part of it is our own choices that we have made over the past 20 years that has kind of led us to this point, really.
Now, that is a very good point. So low rates led us to buy bigger, buy more, and then came higher rates, and then came a market where we couldn't buy bigger anymore, but we didn't want to go smaller. So we went used, which will, if common sense plays out, which the world does not work with common sense, but if it does, that means used at some point will rise and come to equilibrium with new or something. But to me, it feels like, and please chime in here, but if now used is what's most in demand, and when I say now, I'm talking about like now, like last couple of months. I mean, these things are constantly evolving, right? It feels to me like as it's just a pendulum. As that swings too far, it'll come back to new and rebates will come back and back and forth. So,
you know, one of the other patterns, just if we remember back on this, so post-COVID, when inventory levels were so low, we had the computer chip issues in full effect. And so the manufacturers were building, for example, just bare minimum base model trucks. And what happened was we saw these consumers that would have bought new were going used and paying more for a used truck that was loaded with options than a brand new one because of what they wanted. They were conditioned with all of those features and options. And that's another shift in consumer behavior. And I think we continue to see that today because now I can't afford that truck new with all the features and options. So I'm going to continue to look on the pre-owned side because this is what I enjoy in the vehicle I'm driving.
Mm-hmm. Which I can see that happening. It makes sense to me. Kevin, you mentioned that leads are overall down, right? Customer inquiries are down. You mentioned also that use specifically is up just a little bit. Are you and that's year over year, correct? Okay. Are you seeing any change in quality or type? Like, are we seeing more desperate shoppers in the market? Like the really need to haves, desperate meaning lower credit score potentially that cannot get qualified for a vehicle. Are you seeing any difference there?
Yeah, I would give you two patterns. One is that even though, for example, we're seeing increased website traffic, it's not necessarily equating to more leads. They're spending more time on site. So the analogy I would draw is this. I want to take that trip to Hawaii, but I know that it's pretty expensive and I don't know if I can afford it, but I keep going back to that website and researching that trip to Hawaii, but I just don't want to pull the trigger yet because it's expensive. So you're kind of seeing a slowing as to how long they'll wait before they'll actually pull the trigger and reach out and then work. And then, of course, we're going to work with them to close the sale. So I'm seeing it take a little bit longer, right? The buying cycle's extending out. It's getting a little more challenging to close the deals. And, you know, from a marketing perspective, my goal is always to try and drive more in-market shoppers to our site. But I can lead a horse to water, but I can't make him drink. And that's part of what we're seeing right now, too. We can keep bringing more and more horses, but I cannot force them to drink and convert.
Yeah, the scenario you described sounds like my relationship with Zillow. Go on Zillow, look for that.
Yeah.
Okay, and now, so I want to dig deeper there, right? Tell me more about the consumer behavior that you're seeing. Some of the questions I got prior to this episode was revolving around, we've seen lots of online e-commerce, auto retailers not make it. I suffered his fate. I went through this experience as well. But more recently, you've seen Vroom, right? Super well capitalized at one point. They went down. Carvana's gone through its roller coaster cycle, very stock market driven shift, you know, a year ago or so done. What are you seeing in terms of shopper behavior, right? In terms of online, in person?
I'll give you a couple things. So credit pre-approvals are growing. A lot of activity there. A digital retailing tool. We'll normally see 50 to 55,000 pencil deals per month. We're seeing now between 55 to 65,000. What's going on there? What they're doing is they're getting in there and trying to pencil the deal to see, you know, can I qualify? They want to get an idea of what's that monthly payment going to be. We're seeing more time spent on that because, once again, I think they're just being more cautious to pull the trigger. They're trying to self-qualify themselves and see, do I have the financial ability to buy the car that I need? The last thing I would share is that even though we're seeing like a decline in leads, we're working them more aggressively. And now that some of the rebates and incentives are coming back, we're actually raising our closing rates. Which is a good thing because the last few years, I mean, kind of the running joke out here in the field was you could just sit behind a desk and people would line up to buy a car from you without doing a single thing. Now we're having to go back to the fundamentals to really work with people to help them with their credit, whatever the case may be, to put them in that vehicle that they want.
Kevin, in terms of overall sales volume, can you give us some numbers, right? Some perspective of how you're tracking relative to prior year, your overall sales volume units, where are you at?
So on the used side, year to date, we're actually up a little bit over 3%. On the new side, we're down 5.5% to 6%. And so that pattern is really kind of settled in around last October moving forward. if I could literally pull up my analytics and take you down almost to the day, it was right around October 7th and 8th when Israel was attacked. And I think that was kind of the beginning of losing some of the consumer confidence in the market. And that measurably is the one thing we seem to be able to feel to identify was kind of like the final straw to start really slowing down some of the buying patterns that we were seeing out there. So one of the biggest things that we have done, and we led the industry, is we actually removed most of the form submissions on our website. And why might that be? I am here to tell you, and it should be common sense to all of us, that the modern day consumer wants real-time answers 24/7 to the questions we want. Automotive has been following this antiquated model of a website designed around a form submission for over, 20 plus years. And consumers don't want to wait on that answer. And what we did was simple. We just took the calls to action on our website, and rather than point them to a form, which they were abandoning 70% plus, we started directing them directly to live chat to get those real-time answers. We easily tripled and quadrupled our conversion just by doing that. But the other thing I would add is this, that we did, and this is such an exciting time in the industry with AI. We started leveraging AI to work those leads, those opportunities, when we were not available. And so 40% of our shopping activity is happening outside of dealership hours. What we found, very surprisingly, is that it is setting hundreds of appointments per month for us without us lifting a finger and directly selling between 70 to 100 cars per month. And it's all because we're just accommodating what the modern day consumer wants, which is real-time answers to their questions in their automotive shopping experience.
So I'm pretty fascinated because I am on your website right now and I see I'm pressing get in touch. It's putting me into live chat. Love it. You're saying after hours, that turns into an AI-driven live chat. Is that right?
Well, we're leveraging an outside tool to work the leads that are coming in from all our providers. The live chat with AI, we have been exploring. We want to pursue that. But candidly, I have not seen a good solution yet. But if you understand AI and machine learning, all of it takes time to machine learn and get better. And I'm hoping within the next 12 months, we're going to see a very good live chat solution doing that. And for all of your listeners, I'll throw out a challenge. And here's what I am willing to pay for. If you can provide a live chat solution for a portal site with AI backing up that knows which of my 23 rooftops to send that consumer to, I will be thrilled because I think that's going to be one of the next big breakthroughs for us here in automotive.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying actually routing specific customers to where they're best suited.
Right now, we're essentially, you've got it. We're forcing them choose a dealership closest to you, that kind of mechanics, versus letting AI drive the conversation and then push them in the right direction based upon, what's going on in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a guaranteed customer, so I'm sure someone is listening to this, getting some ideas. That's interesting. Okay. Now, I want to transition into brands. So we've kind of table set here on affordability and discussing just kind of state of the consumer. Going more high level, what are you seeing from a brand perspective? What brands are underperforming for you, overperforming, right? What's that state of the union?
Our strongest right now is Toyota. It continues. It has all the way through. I mean, when the truck pulls up front, probably 90% of that inventory is pre-sold. Honda coming in close second, working well. Industry-wide, I think we all read the same news. Stellantis is struggling. We have several Stellantis points. We love Stellantis. We work closely with them. But yeah, you've likely seen some of the news where Stellantis is actually lowering some of their MSRPs currently just to try to make their vehicles more competitively priced. Another one is challenging. It's one of my favorite partners is Nissan. Part of that's probably just because we need to freshen up the line of product that's out there. It seems like most of it updated all around at the same time, and it's getting a little bit flat. But those are probably the two that I'm putting my most time into right now to try and move the needle.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's strictly a price thing? What's driving that? I mean, we've all heard of Stellantis. We all know, like you said, they're dropping some MSRP, right? What's the end game here? Just price?
That is certainly, there's a price thing. To be competitive, it's out there. But with Nissan, I really do think they need to freshen up the inventory. I remember when the Nissan Rogue came out, it was the hottest thing going, and it was fantastic. But you can only go so many years before you really need to freshen up the models. We have over 40 franchises. And the joy of being in automotive today is, regardless of the manufacturer, there are so many great cars to choose from. And that means, as an OEM, you really have to be on your game to compete against the Mazdas, the Nissans, the Kias, the Hyundais, all of the different makes that are out there.
I'm curious if, you know, Toyota being one of your top brands, and it feels like they've kind of hit a stride recently. I mean, they were kind of criticized for being sort of like, you know, a little bit old fashioned for quite some time. Their design has changed a lot, but also where they've been really successful recently has been with hybrids. And although all of the news for the past few years have been consumed by electric vehicles, it feels like hybrids are kind of now having a little bit of their moment, because for, you know, a lot of folks, hybrid is sort of where they are right now in 2024. You know, maybe 2030, it may be different. And it seems like that's giving brands like Toyota a bit of a second wind. I imagine the hybrids are probably hard to keep in stock. When I look at the national numbers, those move pretty quick. Same thing with Honda as well. They're hybrids. And I'm wondering if that's kind of a, you know, a part of, you know, why there is a lot of demand there. It seems like that.
You're 100% right. And I imagine the chairman of Toyota is probably sitting there with a smug look in his face, thinking, I told you all several years ago, we have been following EVs aggressively for 3 years as part of our future. And the UX studies that we were doing 2 and 3 years ago kept indicating, when we listen to the consumer, they're like, well, the answer is already there. The hybrid is what we want. The hybrid is what we need. And it made the most sense. But it seems like all the OEMs were all aboard 100% in the EVs. I think Toyota was taking the right path. It was gutsy. It took some courage to do what they did, and now it's paying off. And the big trend that right now that we're looking at, we're seeing the other OEMs come in on, is on the plug-in hybrids are hotter than a firecracker too coming in. So I think in the long-term picture, the hybrids, the plug-in hybrids, are going to be the transition to a more of an EV market in the future.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Toyota had said that. I want to say I went to a Toyota event in 2010 and they were saying the bridge to EVs is going to be an extremely long one that takes decades, not in the matter of a few years. And it is sort of looking at that. And I think when you think about it, like logically, and I imagine this is probably hard to explain to a customer, you know, for a lot of people, a plug-in hybrid works well. I mean, you know, you're not driving 50 miles a day. Most people aren't. Having that electric charge of 20, 30 miles and the rest is on a hybrid if you want to go on a long trip. It seems like it sort of works well. But I think getting people to the point of understanding that concept is probably, you know, a bit of a challenge versus strictly a hybrid or strictly an electric vehicle. So sometimes it is a bit of a marketing challenge and probably a knowledge challenge as well.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you've got to let the consumers drive. You know, it's their demand is what's going to drive the sales. You can't force something down. I liken it to like the field of dreams. If we build the EVs, they will come. Not necessarily. I mean, there's still a lot of very logical and reasonable concerns and objections that the modern day consumers have with EVs. And so we just can't snap our fingers and overnight be 100% OV within EVs within 5 years. The one thing that fascinates me that California has led in has been the hydrogen fuel cell vehicles with Toyota, because to me, that actually, if you're truly concerned about emissions and the environment, it's a very fascinating idea. It seems like the infrastructure would be a little bit simpler to build out. But out here in Ohio, I've seen hide nor hair of any of that.
Yeah, don't see a lot out here, to be honest, though.
And do you think it's a desirability issue, a price point issue, a combination, right? Because we are seeing that the second most sold EV behind Tesla is, you know, the Chevy Bolt, which was just discontinued, go figure, or just trying to, you know, come up with a new one. But do you think that it's really just lacks product market fit at the current price point, or the vehicles are not desirable enough? How do you see it?
There is absolutely a price point issue, hands down. But from our UX studies, that's not like the preeminent reason why they don't want to do it. They're not foolish. It's down to infrastructure. I mean, we literally have three charging stations right outside of our corporate office. And I'll see people out there for 2 and 3 hours at a time versus going to the gas station for 5 minutes. And so that's a reasonable concern people have. That's their typical experience. I don't want to be waiting to charge this. I live in an apartment building or a condominium. I can't put in a charger. The big one we get all the time is like, what are we doing a long trip? Most of our EV buyers that we have now, these are secondary vehicles. And for us as dealers, I'm not anti-EV by any measure. In fact, if you've driven them, they're absolutely cool. The features and everything are phenomenal. 90% of our battle is to get someone behind the wheel because we can probably get them to fall in love with it. But once we even do it that, it keeps coming back to infrastructure. How am I going to charge this, et cetera? And that's where it becomes difficult because I think we as a nation are still years behind building out the infrastructure that we need to have in place.
On that note, Kevin, are you thinking right now about growth? And if you are, what are you specifically looking at from a brand perspective? How are you thinking about that in general?
What has been going on for the last year defies a lot of traditional economics. So we as dealers are not only uncertain, we are cautious. We're literally taking this month by month at this point. If you want to ask what we're focusing on, I'm going to tell you it's efficiency. Because back to economics 101, you grow through volume or efficiency. Right now, I don't think any of us dealers out there are going to have a growth game based upon volume. But efficiency is a whole nother question. I think we can become a lot more efficient to drive that growth and profitability. And then once again, the good news with a lot of the technology that we're seeing today, with the AIs of the world, we can talk about customer data platforms, things to that nature, are giving us incredible game-changing opportunities to be more efficient as ever, while most importantly, becoming even more consumer-facing. So our number one objective right now is efficiency.
And before we wrap up, I do want to shift to big picture. Jessica, as you think about the outlook for the next 30, 60, 90 days, looking at the macro, but also hearing what Kevin has to say, what is your outlook on the car market?
Right. Well, March is generally one of the strongest selling months of the year, if we look at just from a volume standpoint. And then we're going to kind of go into April is a bit hit or miss. And then we go into the strong selling months. So I think we're headed into at least a good territory. January and February are always notoriously slow. So I wouldn't take where 2024 will end based on what we have seen this year thus far. But I think we'll see a little bit more discounting that is going to come to the market. And I think that is definitely going to help drive traffic. Interest rates, that's always a big question. We want them to go down. Doesn't look like, especially after seeing the latest economic report, that that's necessarily going to happen in the next few months. It looks like that's going to stay relatively high. So it really is up to automakers, I think, at this point to move the metal. Who's willing to incentivize a bit more? Obviously, they want to take advantage of that strong spring, early summer selling season. So kind of figuring out what those programs are at that point is going to be good. But, you know, consumers, I think, they are scared. They've had a tumultuous past few years of shopping for a new vehicle, and there is a lot of trepidation. So I think a little bit more convincing, having better deals out there will definitely bring them more to market. But it's probably the time to, if you're going to do it, just to start at this point.
Jessica, well stated. Kevin, before we wrap up, any closing thoughts on your end?
I would say we as dealers, we have rising floor plan expense with these high interest rates. And so we're actually very incentivized to discount the vehicles just as much as the manufacturer wants to put out rebates and incentives. So that paints a pretty good picture if you're a car buyer right now to get a good deal.
And what do you have to say for dealers that are listening?
I would say for dealers right now that in good times and bad, there's not a time for excuses for us. It's rather how we address the current market. And that's part of what makes automotive so exciting. It's like an eternal game of chess that keeps you up every night, but you're not going to win because there's so many moving parts you got to work around. It is a challenging market right now, but that means the dealers that hit it most aggressively and get creative are going to be the ones that win. And so we're excited to work through this market.
Well stated, my friend. Jessica Caldwell, Kevin Fry, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate all the insights. It's going to be definitely an interesting couple months, and I'm excited to keep, you know, following tabs on the outlook you shared here and see how this all plays out.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Please give the podcast a rating, consider subscribing to the show, and check the show notes for links to what we talked about. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you guys next time.